Hi, everybody. Bob Claster here, and I'm your host for Funny Stuff, half an hour of comedy presented every Friday night here on KCRW. Tonight, we're going to be listening to the work of Gene Shepherd. Gene Shepherd is indeed a very, very funny man. I grew up listening to him on the radio on WOR in New York, and he used to be on every night from, I think, 9:10 until 10. I remember it was hard to stay up that late. Now I look at that and it's fairly amazing. And he would come on and he would play the Jew's harp to Dixieland records or bop on his head in tune to music. And the main thing that he would do is tell wonderful nostalgic stories, one of which is the basis for a current film entitled A Christmas Story. Which I haven't seen, so I can't tell you about. But I have read the book that it was based on, and it's based on a wonderful book entitled In God We Trust, All Others Pay Cash. His memories of growing up in the 30s and 40s in a town called Hammond, Indiana. Things like listening to Little Orphan Annie on the radio and finally getting your mother to buy the Ovaltine that you needed to send in the wrapper so that you could get the Dakota ring, and you finally get the Dakota ring and you find out that the secret messages all along are just instructions to buy more Ovaltine. Very, very funny man. The two records that he put out, unfortunately, are not great representations of his humor. As I say, I recommend that book, In God We Trust, All Others Pay Cash. There's also a second book called Wanda Hickey's Night of Golden Memories and Other Disasters. And I think they're both still in print. He's also done a lot of stuff for PBS. He, in fact, appeared on All Things Considered for a bit, doing some little commentaries and things. And sometimes he's wonderful, and sometimes he's not. These records are not terrific. The one that I have is from 1959, and it is in terrible condition. Isn't that great? We won't be hearing that much from that one. There is some very good stuff on this other one, which came out in 1971 on Mercury, called The Declassified Gene Shepherd. Neither of these are as good as his radio show used to be, or his live show, which he used to do every Saturday night in Greenwich Village. But we do the best we can with what we've got. That's the Funny Stuff motto. And let's press on ahead with some memories of childhood from Gene Shepherd.
Every family's got a non-eater in it. My kid brother was the non-eater. My old man used to feed him with a screwdriver. He'd just say, "All right, it's been 3 weeks, you eat now." He'd just grab the top of the head. He says, "All right, pour it in him." My mother used a plumber's helper. Well, I mean, that was pre-Spock. He never tried anything, He didn't eat once for 7 years. Well, now my kid brother wouldn't eat, see? And the only way my mother could get him to eat was at that time he was going through his Three Little Pigs phase. For Christmas, he got this book about the Three Little Pigs, see? My mother would walk up to Randy and say, "Randy, say, eat your oatmeal, Randy." "I don't want to go to school. My stomach hurts." She says, "Now look, you're going to go to school. Now your stomach has hurt every day since you were 2. Now you're going to go to school. Now I don't want to hear any more whining. Now eat your oatmeal." And then she would use her big ploy. She would say, "Randy, how do the three little piggies go? Oink, 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 oink." Just, "Randy, there's your trough." And instantly he would go, "Oink, oink, 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 oink." Boy, he would slop that in, it would come out of his ears. And you know, I want to tell you how stuff that you did when you were a little kid sticks with you. You never lose it. About 5 years ago, me and my kid brother, now my brother's 6'2", he's wedge-shaped, he's an elegant guy, He and I went out back home to visit, you know, so he and I went out to dinner. We went to this French restaurant. Elegant restaurant, and another guy that comes up and says, "Excuse me, sir, shall you take a look at the wine list?" And that kind of thing. And Randy's sitting there, we got a candle going. And I just had to do it. He had this filet of sole Amandine. It was just delivered to him, so he's just about to start, and I suddenly go, "Randy, there's your trough. How do the piggies go?" And it caught him off guard. He went, "Oink, oink, oink." He just says, "Oink, oink." And I could see this waiter. And Randall looked up, he had this Amandine all over his face. He said, "You son of a bitch." I says, "Randy, I wanted to see if the old reflexes were still there, you know. You can still go to your right, kid, you know."
Listen to this. This requires tremendous timing, concentration, and wrist action. The deaf leading the deaf, really. It wasn't exactly Mick Jagger, but it wasn't bad.
If I were ever going to storm a pillbox, you know the kind of pillbox that they're always storming in the Van Johnson pictures? It means there's no return. Sheer, sudden, utter, and certain death. I could just see this colonel saying, "Shepard, storm that pillbox. Pick six guys." I'd look around at this platoon, and I'd pick six White Sox fans, because these guys have known death every day of their lives, and it holds no terror for them now. Let me tell you about being a White Sox fan. There is something special about being a White Sox fan. The White Sox haven't won a pennant in the recorded history of mankind. They know nothing but defeat, frustration, and disaster. This mosaic of human comedy. You see, a White Sox fan measures victory in terms of defeat. Like if the White Sox lose 6-5, that's a good day, because it's usually about 7-2. And if Luke Appling gets 3 hits, that makes the month. I mean, even though the Sox lost 11-3, Luke knocked out 3 of them today. By George. Luke Appling once batted .388, won the American League batting championship, playing on the Chicago White Sox. And that year, he knocked in 27 runs. There was just never anybody on base. It would be like living in a jungle with nothing but tigers as far as you could see, and you're the only human being, and you represent the human race, and you're trying to keep it alive. Luke Appling. And then I remember Zeke Benora. This is a typical White Sox player. Banana nose Benora. Zeke Benora, playing first base. One year won the American League fielding championship and never laid a glove on a ball. He just stood there, day after day. Every man's great moment on the White Sox happened when nobody was watching. They had this pitcher named Bill Dietrich. Wild Bill Dietrich. He was kind of fat. He was a typical White Sox pitcher, and he was nearsighted. And any guy who was nearsighted who was in the big leagues was great as far as I was concerned. Always in the spring, you'd see pictures of him in the Chicago Tribune. It would say, "Dietrich, signs packed." And it always looked as if there was a thumbprint on his left lens. And he had this kind of funny squint, you know, that nearsighted guys get. You know, one year, Bill Dietrich lost 15 games and won 7. And the next season he held out. because he'd had a good year. Well, it was a good year, you know. The year before that, he'd lost 19. So old Bill Dietrich is out there pitching one day, and you can look this up in the record books. Bill Dietrich pitched a no-hit, no-run game against the St. Louis Browns. 37 games out of first place. The White Sox were 41 games out of first place. They were just 2 games ahead of the fourth place team in the American Association. The White Sox and the Browns. Sister teams of defeat. For over 7 years, simultaneously, they occupied the cellar in the American League. It was kind of a ballet of disaster. And Bill Dietrich pitched a no-hit game. There were 243 paid admissions, 186 patrol boys, and 3 troops of Girl Scouts who saw Bill Dietrich at the very, very apex of his world. And probably right this very minute now, poor old Bill Dietrich is polishing somebody's window at some smiling service station, looking in with that same squint. But he was there once. He was there and he did it. I remember one time Bill Dietrich is standing out there on the mound. He had this beautiful motion, you know. He looked kind of like a caveman. And he would walk in circles out there and look down and peer into the darkness. And he had this catcher named Mike Tresh, who went once for over 2 years without getting a hit. A real White Sox ball player. And he used to laugh it up all the time. All right, come on, let's go. We got him going here. Let's go, Bill. Let's go. Put it right here, old man. And here's Bill Dietrich out there pitching. He's behind 7-1. Mike Tresh is talking it up. He's squinting down there, looking into the darkness. Old Bill shakes off a sign, glances back towards second base where the runner's taking a short lead. He shakes off another sign, and everybody in the park knew that Dietrich had only 2 pitches. His slow curve and his wild one. He's already shaken off 3 signs. It was just the White Sox trying to play it out, you know? Trying to make it look better. Trying to make it look better for all of us. They represented not Chicago, but the South Side. Do you know what it feels like to be a South Sider in a world of North Siders? Yeah. Let me tell you about that. They got this special ball team up there. They call them the Cubs. And they have this ballpark that has these vines growing up. And on top of the vines, they got these little guys wearing Wrigley gum hats. And this big fat clown of an announcer was always saying, yeah, the Cubs are going to have a great year. The Cubs are going to have a great year. And I remember one time the White Sox are playing the Cubs in the City Series, which is the only kind of glory we ever saw. And Mike Krivich got lost for 15 minutes in the vines in center field. They had to call the game for a while when they went out there and looked for him. Mike Krivich, a White Sox outfielder who hadn't seen a leaf in years. This guy lived in nothing but concrete and coal mines. Mike Krivich, there's a name. There is a White Sox name. Mickey Mantle. Mickey Mantle. What a name for a ball player. Mickey. Bobby. Mike Krivich. There's a name. This is a name that's made out of old red bricks, used bricks. The kind of bricks you buy at the lumber yard. Got chunks of tar hanging on it and old concrete. Pieces of straw and other things. Can't even discuss it. I remember Mike Krivich standing out in center field with tobacco juice squirting out of both ears. He's just standing out there. He looks like a fire plug with feet. I'll never forget the first time that it happened. They took Mike Krivich out for a pinch hitter. I'm sitting there next to the radio. Bob Elson says, next man up is Krivich. I says, wait a minute. Looks like they're sending in who's number 7 there. They're not letting Mike hit. Mike Krivich is taken out for a pinch hitter on the Chicago White Sox. It was then I began to see that the world was changing. Somebody named Bobby or Johnny came up to hit for him. It was the beginning of a new world. Banana Nose Zeke Bonora is back selling fruit in New Orleans. Thank you.
You ever look at the people around you and say, how the hell did I ever wind up with these idiots? I can imagine many a guy turning to his wife and saying, what the hell is this nut talking about? How many times, you know, I wonder how many times in the average day, guy's sitting at the table, he looks up and he sees his wife over there by the sink. And he says, Jesus Christ. When did all this start? Kids crying. Sink dripping. You caused it all. That's the problem. It's deep down inside of office. It's like when I was in the Army. Peace-loving America. Hear them all applauding. Yeah. I think most people are protesting Army movies. Because most protesters were never in the Army. I mean, they know war as hell. They know what it was like when Van Johnson took Iwo Jima. Yeah. I've never seen the Army I was in the movies. I've seen every lousy Army movie ever made. I never recognized the Army I was in. In fact, I remember one time sitting with my fellow victims in Company K one night. We're sitting in this Quonset hut. Temperature 112. We are wearing nothing but tin hats, GI shorts, shoes, and dog tags. Just sitting there sweating. It's dripping off of us. This is a scene you'll never see in an Army movie. This is the real Army. All of us, all of Company K has been gathered together. This Quonset hut. The sun has been beating down on it for 20 years. It's got a thick growth of fungus. You can see lizards once in a while crawling. There is not another human being within a million miles of us. Once in a while out in the darkness you hear, it is a bull alligator looking for action. And you know, it got so that excited us. Boy, when the alligators start looking good, you're in trouble. You'd hear this alligator. We're sitting there, all the company came. I had this case of heat rash. Well, actually, heat rash had become my hobby. It gave me something to do. I just scratched. And it was all over me. Once in a while, I'd find myself scratching Zinsmeister. You know? Sit next to me. He'd be scratching me, you know. I'm just sitting there. In comes Lieutenant Cherry. Eddies! All right, men. As all you know, according to War Department Article 6SJ7 GTL, it is our duty to see this Signal Corps film every 6 months, along with our 6-month shots and re-indoctrination and rehabilitation programs. I want all you to stay awake this film. Sergeant Kowalski will give you question and answers immediately following the film. Any of you got any questions, Kowalski will answer. He knows all about this. All right, Corporal, start the film. Film goes on. We got these goddamn films every 10 minutes. And they always consisted of the same thing. I would come to this black screen. So, this is why, to this day, I hate movies. I never go to movies. Just bug me. I break out in the heat rash. Right? Can't stand the sight of movies. A U.S. Army Signal Corps film. And the helmets start hitting together. Instantly, we all start falling asleep. It was like a field of rusty tin mushrooms. You could feel them tinking at each other, you know, hitting. Classified material. And it fades out. Gas is gone. He is so far away. His mind is 20 million miles away. His body is completely limp. Zinsmeister's over on his side. I'll never forget that opening scene. It was a small town. No feet. Just a town. And it was dark. There was a street light right in the middle of the scene. And standing next to the streetlight is this chick. I want to tell you. I mean, you know, it was like about 45 beach balls having a fight. You could just see instantly all across the company. You saw these helmets straightening up, clinking. What the hell is this, you know? It's a real film, you know? And then you see, coming from stage right, you see this GI walking along. He's got a cigar. You know, he's a typical PFC. He's even wearing Signal Corps beret, just like us, you know? He's walking along. It's one of us, see? Guess, for Christ's sake, look at that. Where the hell's the drill sergeant? Ain't they gonna teach him some nomenclature or something? Care and treatment of the M-38? This GI walks along. And you see this chick standing up against that street one. And the music starts. And you see her old bottom start to move. And the whole company, Company K, is leaning forward. I mean, it was the first time since our second day in basic when the entire company was awake all at once. You're sitting there, what a moment. And then this GI walks past this chick, saying he gives her the eye, smoking a cigar. She looks at him. And then the narration started. Danger. You are looking at the enemy. This guy, see, he sees it. His old eyeballs pop out. I mean, like any normal red-blooded PFC in a Signal Corps. Walks over. He says something to him. They don't even let us know what he says, but boy, did it work. Because the next thing you know, the two of them are walking down a street. He's got the cigar. You see him going up these steps. And the whole crowd is sitting there leaning forward. Jesus, the jackpot. And now he's up at the landing, see, and there's this door, this kind of seedy-looking little apartment, see. And he takes his cigar out, his mouth, and he puts it on the railing. What a nice touch. Outside of the door. And she opens the door, and she goes... In they go, the door closes, and then the music goes, Bum, ba-dum, bum. Yes, that man is in dire danger. What the MC said, the narrator. Dire danger. He has just 2 hours to get to the green light. Dun, 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 dun. And he comes walking out. His cigar is still the same length. And the entire company breaks into a roar of fantastic applause. Hooray! What a performance! There's a real performance. And then he's walking down a street. Dun, 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 ding. And the voice says, yes, that man is now in danger. He has just 2 hours to get to the pro station. Dun, ba, dun, bum. And the entire company gave a round of absolutely unsolicited applause. It was the first time, I think, ever that VD was applauded. There wasn't one guy in the company that would not have wanted to have that problem. What is VD? Well, I want to tell you, the lights went up after that film. And Kowalski walks out. Sergeant Kowalski, our VD expert. By the way, that day he achieved new stature in our eyes. Kowalski says, all right, men, any questions? You know, everybody's sitting there. None of us could ask the obvious questions we had. You know, like, where can you get it? And out in the distance, you hear this bull alligator go, ugh. And some smart ass hollers, watch it, fella. You don't know where she's been hanging out.
And there you have Gene Shepherd. That material taken from two records, one called The Declassified Gene Shepherd from 1971, and from 1959, The Baseball Routine, came from Gene Shepherd and Other Foibles on the Elektra label. And as I said, I don't think that stuff really lives up to his old radio stuff, but it's still funny just the same. Coming up next week, we've got a bunch of special shows coming up. Next week is the Christmas show, that should be fun. After that is the New Year's show with my special co-host, Harry Shearer. By the way, if you're not listening to Harry's show on Sunday mornings at 9:30 till 11:30, you're missing something. You're missing Harry's show, in fact. And then coming up in January, the first two shows will be the best of funny stuff. Your choices and my choices for the best of what we've heard over the past year in funny stuff. If you've got any nominations for the best of funny stuff, send them to Bob Claster with a C, KCRW, Santa Mo- 1900 Pico Boulevard, Santa Monica, California. You might put funny stuff on the envelope, too. And that'll do it until next week's Christmas show. This is your host, Bob Claster, reminding you to always keep that sense of humor well exercised because you never know when you're going to need it. Goodbye. Good night, everybody.